Do you know that he took an entire week to shoot the chariot scenes alone? DeMille was spending up to $40,000 a day at one point, so the action scenes were lavish, lavish as none theretofore. 300 chariots were manufactured for the epic, to be drawn by a $10,000 team of stallions, and to be driven by... Well, that's the rest of the story. C.B. DeMille needed chariot drivers. He needed hundreds of them. Problem was, the art of chariot driving was by 1923 a long-lost art. So lacking those specifically skilled, DeMille recruited Hollywood cowboys and real-life soldiers. The cowboys knew their way around horses and had plenty of motion picture experience. The soldiers were rugged physical specimens from the 2nd Battalion of the 76th Field Artillery, Presidio boys from Monterey. In command of the soldiers was Lieutenant Tony McAuliffe, who was to become famous during World War II for his gallant stand at the Battle of the Bulge, remember? But for now, there was another battle to be fought in the service of the Army of the Pharaoh, in what would become the DeMille classic, The Ten Commandments. At first, the movie cowboys and the artillerymen fell into friendly rivalry, both groups claiming superior skills at the reins of an Egyptian chariot. But quickly, the challenge of chariot driving proved more formidable than either had imagined. DeMille had a 20-piece orchestra playing on location to put the actors in the proper mood for each scene. And the first day of shooting, one of the drivers lost control of his chariot, drove it straight through the string section, while his comrades collided in a major ancient-style traffic accident. In fact, the Ten Commandments, as millions eventually saw it, was almost never seen. Because when DeMille ordered his charioteers down a steep sand dune slope, a couple of days later, they outright refused. I mean these big, strong, brawny movie cowboys and those fierce fighting men from the United States Army itself took one look over that Southern California sand dune, another look at the tricky contraptions they were driving. They told DeMille unequivocally, unilaterally, no. Well, we have an unprecedented movie budget at stake. Time and money are running out. What's Director DeMille to do? Well, this is what he did. He turned to a stunt person. He said, take a chariot up on that high sand dune and drive it down. And at DeMille's demand, the task was performed successfully and repeatedly, until the humiliated cowboys and soldiers were forced to admit that it could be done, and with the cameras rolling, they did it. For C.B. DeMille, he had chagrined his charioteers into action through the example not of a stunt man, but of a stunt girl. Under the direction of one of the greatest motion picture directors of all time, and to prove that the Pharaoh's army could also safely do what they were told to do, a stunt girl took the reins of a chariot, took the chariot over that towering sand dune without ever having performed a single movie stunt in her entire life. The young lady who drove up and down that dune that afternoon, cheerfully, even giggling, laughing, the girl who led motion picture professionals, even the United States Army, into battle, was Cecilia DeMille, Director Cecil B. DeMille's own daughter, age 12. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Slo Heating and Air, your local, reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
We have to wait until everybody, we don't want to interrupt the recording.
Welcome back to Open Mic Friday. And you have Kenny in the driver's seat again today, and Darsha in the mic that has been muted that we think
it has not.
It's subtle, though.
It's a directional mic.
I'm right in front of the mic.
When you're over here, you can't.
I'm right in front of the
mic. When you're in front of it, you can hear it.
All right. So, Kenny, we were talking about the Paso Robles School Board and the Measure M, and we were doing some collaborative research over the break. Unlike some of our conversations that are
not collaborative,
a little more contentious, maybe.
Well, the what we were talking about and comparing was Measure M to this new measure, which is going to be G26. But I have to stop because we have a call. Go ahead, caller. Thank you for
Hi. Good afternoon. So, okay, so taking up the bond issue, I was reading an article that said Dale Scott, who is a consultant for the district, has made the comment that it's going to take a lot of strong public education for this campaign to succeed. Well, whose money are they going to use?
Yours.
Yes, mine, yours, and everybody else's to promote that bond. So, but my main question was, is that I have gone back and looked at that presentation by Brad Pawlowski three or four times. And I'm trying to get all of the facts straight and make sure I know what they are proposing and what it is they want to do. But I think it's really important that the people go in and look at that presentation and understand that Brad Pawlowski himself has said that if this bond measure passes, it's going to add about $300 a year to your property taxes. On an average. And that's significant. That's going to mean a lot to a lot of people, and that's something that they really need to be paying attention to. But the other question, follow-up, is it true that the school district is going to delete all of its videos after a certain period of time?
They've already been doing it.
How about this one? Do you know about this one? I haven't been in there in about a month, so...
Have you downloaded it, or have you?
I had to take out a YouTube account, and I download all the board meetings now because.
And I was going to ask if that's what has to happen. If you can't go on to the district and look at that YouTube from there because they've deleted it, can you download it to your own account?
Within 30 days.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So, as a person that has educated yourself about this bond measure, do you feel that you need more education?
No, I really don't. I was beside myself for the entire presentation. I sort of sat back and I wondered, where do you get the cojones to stand in front of the public when we've still got all of these other bond measures on our property tax bills, and you get up there and you tell me that a significant amount of this money you need to build a state-of-the-art kitchen so that you can educate high school students to work in a kitchen?
Exactly.
And I thought, where does that come from? I don't understand where it comes from, but I don't need any more information. I've watched that video time and time again. I can agree with one aspect of it, and everything else is absolute garbage. And you know that, what is it, the $180 million? You know that'll be $400 million by the time they're done.
Yeah, it's actually $205 million, and still don't know, I don't know, whether or not it's 25 years, 30 years, 35 years, or could even be pushed out to 40 years.
Yeah.
It's not stipulated. I've got a copy of the bond resolution, and you can go on to the slowvote.org.
Slowvote.com, slowvote.gov.
You can go onto that and read the resolution and everything, but you mentioned Dale Scott, and Dale Scott, I voted against renewing their contract. I've become frustrated by how the other six members of the board are just being led around by their noses. The board meeting on Tuesday night, there were 35 consent agenda items, and it was almost $1 million dollars of
expenditures
things that were approved, and I started calling them out on it, and I called out Loftus, and I said, I know the definition of a successful board meeting in the eyes of the other six is if we can get out of there by 9, that's a super successful board meeting. And they don't read the material. You have board members up there that are texting their families or their friends or doing their personal work, and it's just You know, Kogan.
Well, it's disgraceful.
Yeah, Kogan's classic line that I will say over and over in the coming 2 months is when, if you go back to the spring of 2025, when we voted on the changes for the Georgia Brown, the current Georgia Brown campus, Kogan openly said, I usually just do what staff recommends, but it's obvious that people don't like this.
Yeah. Well, and welcome to the Paso Robles City Council. Do you think that they read every document that comes through? No, they go with staff's recommendation, and they'll freely tell you that. And it bothers me a lot every time it happens in City Council, where you have a consent agenda that has so many items on it, and the way they word it, and the school board does the same thing. The way they word it, you can't identify what that item is on the consent calendar until you click on it and open it up. And so when you do that to that many items, pretty soon you're done. You know, you're just tired. You're done. And that's deliberate. And I would like for that to stop. I would like to see there be a maximum amount on the consent calendar and then move on from there. But going back to the bound issue, yes, I would like to know whether or not they intend to, that's going to be a 40-year out bond issue or what, and I would like some real good hard numbers on exactly what it's going to wind up costing the people and what that measure is going to be as an end result.
Well, yeah, I have not, I've got another presentation that was from, and this is from Dale Scott as well.
And Dale Scott, if I can add in here, Dale Scott is one of the consultants that have gone up and down the state. They have probably hundreds of school districts and promoting these bonds up and down the state. And at one point in time, back in the early 2010, 2009, it was actually a very big problem. Poway School District was one where there were fraud charges, and they actually had legislation that came in to modify how they were doing these capital expenditure bonds. So,
wow.
It's a little better, but it's still, people don't realize it's like a mortgage. It's a loan. So
yeah.
When you have a $205 million and paying that back, it's $400 million. Plus, you know, if you have $205 million over a period of time, you're paying for that money with interest, and it becomes a total loan of almost $400 million.
Well, and the other thing I'd like people to remember is that, or to know, I should start with that, to know, is that our county and this city and this school board has a reputation of being corrupt. And so when I look at bond, yeah, I know, shocking, isn't it? So when I look at bond measures like this, I ask myself, what does it get us? What does it get the people? And is it going to aid in the education of our children? And I don't think so. You know, I certainly could be wrong about that. But anybody who says to me, your kids will learn better if they're in a beautiful building, is just so full of you know what. So tell me, too. Go back and give me the numbers about how many of our kids did not pass equivalency tests for math and English and that, because that's going to be a big part of my argument, is that if you're going to spend your money on anything, spend it on educating my child.
Well, I got that, actually. Let me go back to the Measure M stuff, but let me first answer the Dale Scott issue. If you go back, if you write down October 14th, 2025, the facility master planning and bond discussion, there are two scenarios that are listed out for potential 2026 bonds. One is a 25-year, and one is a 15-year. Now, after that, I'm pretty sure they provided a 30 and a 35 and a 40. But I don't have that presentation in front of me. But, you know, Dale Scott, my biggest issue with Dale Scott, frankly, with this new bond is the fact, and this is why I asked at the board meeting, were they involved in writing this new bond measure, which it doesn't look like anybody read or anybody proofread, at least.
Right.
And I'll read the one paragraph that all they had to do was take it out. That's all I asked. Take it out. Make it correct.
It's not truthful.
It's not truthful. So this one paragraph still angers me. And it's, while the district's goal is to maintain and improve its facilities so that each student may learn in safe and healthy classrooms, the district has an ongoing need for basic repairs, including fixing deteriorating classrooms, aging bathrooms and water pipes, plumbing and electrical wiring. And here's the part that I have issue with: removing asbestos, lead paint and mold, ensuring safe, clean drinking water, maintaining fire safety and replacing outdated security systems. Many of Paso Robles High School's buildings are in need of upgrades and repairs.
But we don't have asbestos, do we?
There is. I could do a whole show, but it's okay. It's not a concern really in the high school. You have a 12-foot by 12-foot area. It's in the tile going into the locker room. So
okay.
I called them out months ago. I called them out. I said, I'm raising the BS flag because that school was built in 1981 and asbestos was banned in 1978. So riddle me this, Batman. How did you get asbestos into that building? Well, it's a 12-foot by 12-foot area. It is documented, but the district hasn't done, they are out of compliance with federal law on all sorts of levels. So that's an entirely separate show, which I won't go down. So I gave them a pass on that, but then I asked about the lead paint. And what they don't seem to understand is this is stuff that's documented with the state and the feds. So they've made up a story, and that's exactly what they did, in my opinion. It was either Dale Scott and their, quote, I'm using the air quotes, you know, boilerplate language.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was either Dale Scott with their boilerplate language and said, oh, well, this will tug at people's heartstrings, or they really had it. Well, it's not there. The lead paint, on the 9 June meeting, I met with Pawlowski because I brought it up. I said in the bond measure, there's nothing to support the lead paint, the mold, or the safe drinking water. Absolutely nothing. Because all that stuff, you can go online and search records and see that it's not there. And I brought it up to Pawlowski in a sidebar. And then on the 23rd June meeting, Pawlowski gave a presentation to the board and put a slide up, said there's no lead paint at the high school. Okay, well, you just admitted then that it's wrong.
Yeah.
The next thing you should have said, Brad, is, okay, and so what I recommend, staff recommends now that we have a special board meeting and we rewrite this bond measure and put out correct information to the community. They did not do that. And as a result, you know, the board technically is in violation of Prop 39, because under Prop 39, it says that a list of specific school facilities projects to be funded in certification that the school district board, community college board, or county office of education has evaluated safety, class size reduction, information technology needs, and developing the list. We didn't do that. You know, the board was handed a document and said, approve it. And the board's like, okay, as long as we can get out of here by 9, we'll do it.
Wow.
So, I mean, we're in violation of that. I looked at 8 years worth of facility inspections. There is nothing on there in the high school for mold. I've looked up, I forgot the, there was an assembly bill, I think it was 746 or 764, that was passed back in the early 2000s that required all school districts with buildings built prior to 2010 to evaluate and provide a report back to the state and list out whether they had unsafe drinking water because of lead or PCBs or whatever. We're clean. All of our pipes are clean. If our water is bad, then that's the city's fault at that point.
Yes, yeah.
And so maybe the city can come in and say, hey, why are you pointing the finger at us? Our drinking water is clean, Paso Robles Joint Unified School District. He made it up, or Dale Scott made it up. But the bottom line is, in my opinion, they're lying to the community. And they're doing it specifically because they want to tug at the heartstrings of people and say, oh, Lord, help me.
Well, you know, and that'll just carry forward to more arguments for the bond. because they're lying.
Right. And so circling back to Measure M now, and you were asking about Measure M and academics and stuff. When you read the Measure M, I got to put my spectacles on. When you read the Measure M ballot measure question, you know, one of the big things that's in there, it says, to repair, acquire, upgrade equipment, and construct classrooms and facilities, including blah, 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 blah. But it expands CTE. They didn't do any of that. But one of the things it says in there is improve building earthquake safety. Well, when I got on the board in 2023, I kept saying, all right, that's part of the bond measure question. That's in there. There's nothing in that bond measure question about an aquatics complex, but you have a line in here about earthquake safety. And you also have a line in there that says all funds spent on local high schools and not for administrator salaries. We've spent over $2 million paying administrators to oversee these projects. And my understanding right now is the one that's overseeing Georgia Brown actually lives in Texas. So I don't know how that works. And nobody will answer my question off of staff. So if staff, if you're listening, which I know you usually do, you can send me an email or call in and explain to the community how that works. But when I started calling out the issue on the earthquake safety, because particularly you still have some buildings from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s over at the Flamson campus, and then you have the Creston Road campus, came back like, oh, it's okay. Okay, then why was it in the bond measure question?
And why wasn't it addressed? Why wasn't there funds allocated?
So at that point, I realized they make stuff up in order to tug at people's heartstrings.
Yeah, so, well, isn't that what happens? That happens everywhere, you know, no matter where it is you go. They throw in, as Kevin on KPRL will say, you know, as soon as you throw in children and puppy dogs, you know, you've got a winner.
Oh, yeah. And when you look, you can go on. I'll keep talking over the break. You can text us more questions or you can call back.
Well, I still just want the numbers of
academics.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I'll go over that. All right, thanks for
thank
the call.
You.
Sorry to hijack the conversation.
That's all right.
All right, we'll be back in a minute.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages finishing higher for the day, but down for the week, with the Dow suffering its worst week since March, while the NASDAQ and S&P 500 snapped a three-week winning streak. Interest rates on government bonds are still elevated despite efforts of Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to contain borrowing costs. Oil prices are at a one-month high, fueling inflation concerns, with West Texas Intermediate crude at over $86 a barrel. CryptoLink stocks surged along with the price of Bitcoin, the world's largest cryptocurrency, topping $77,000 following President Trump's push for the Clarity Act. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, Caterpillar, and Amgen. The Dow decliners, Honeywell Technologies, Apple, and NVIDIA. The Dow up 518 points, the NASDAQ higher by 113, S&P 500 up 33. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
You're probably listening to this in your car, so let me ask you, would you drive without insurance? Of course not. So why is your retirement portfolio unprotected? Gold is portfolio insurance. It helps de-risk your savings when markets get unpredictable. Noble Gold Investments has helped thousands of Americans do exactly that, with no high-pressure sales and thousands of five-star reviews. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine, pump, or forklift, Propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online, deltaliquidenergy.com.
Hi, this is Dylan with Limp Patrol. We specialize in professional dryer vent cleaning and appliance preventative maintenance. If your clothes are taking longer to dry, your dryer could be warning you about a hidden fire hazard. Limp Patrol is here to help keep your home safe, improve appliance performance, and even lower your energy bills. Regular maintenance can help your appliances last longer and keep your home running efficiently. Don't overwork your dryer or let hidden lint start a fire. Call Limp Patrol today for a free estimate at 805-975-5176 or visit limppatrolca.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
All right, we're back. I'll continue my rant. Darsha's wanting to Darsha's wanting to talk about something else, so I'll be fast. But the caller's question was about academic performance. And right now, Paso Robles Joint Unified School District, district-wide, if you look at the CASP scores, which are the state standardized test scores, and I'll get an email, but if you go to Google, you can type in CASP, and then it'll take you to the standardized tests. But district-wide, 43.94% of students last year met, and this the most recent data on there is for the 24-25 school year. 25-26 isn't published yet, but I did get a preview of that. But 43.94% met or exceeded standards in English language arts, and 29.98 met or exceeded standards in math. You know, if you want to break that down, for the graduating class of 25, 57.43% met or exceeded standards in English language arts. This is the graduating class, and 26.39% met or exceeded standards in math. The year before that, only 17.31%. So the class of 24, or actually I have that backwards. Class of 26, 26.39% met or exceeded standards in math. And the class of 25, 17.31% met or exceeded standards in math. Because this is they get tested in the 11th grade. But, you know, let's look at Measure M specifically. So the bulk of money, the biggest project besides the aquatics complex, the biggest project was for Bauer Spec. And Bauer Spec was about a 40% overcost or over budget. And then the aquatics complex, you know, initially was advertised in the bond measure of only going to cost $7 million or so. And even if you read the Citizen Oversight Committee, there's an asterisk that says the aquatic center budget originally included $8,207,990 in fundraising and in-kind donations. That never materialized. So when, you know, the district's saying, hey, you know, mission accomplished or whatever the term is, we can be trusted. Their message right now is they're trying to advertise how great Measure M was. Now, why are they doing that? If you go and you look at the slowvote.com and you look at the arguments for the bond measure for G26, the one that's coming up in November, all the proponents of that bond measure are hanging their hat on how successful Measure M was. I argue that it wasn't. You know, you look at, going back to Bauer Spec, 40% overruns. It was 2 years later than it was supposed to be. And if you look at the academic performance of Bauer Spec, let's see. In 2015, I don't have it for that far back, but, you know, right now, for the 24-25 school year, only 36.89% of the school met or exceeded standards in English language arts, 21.46% met or exceeded standards in math.
looking at the preliminary numbers that are supposed to be out in a couple of weeks, my understanding is the English language arts has dropped 16%. So you're looking at an English language arts proficiency of in the low 20s somewhere. You know, if that number's correct, you're looking at 20.89% met or exceeded standards in English language arts and 21% met or exceeded standards in math. That's horrible.
But it's actually
and that's where most of the money went in. And this is one of the community schools where they're getting an extra $200,000 a year, supposedly to boost scores. And all they're doing district-wide is they're hiring more people. You know, I voted against this squaring of the salaries as well. Not that it's a bad idea, not that I disagree with the fact that there's an issue. I disagree with the fact that they want to, the intent of this was not to make sure that we had competitive wages for the janitorial staff and the bus drivers and the teachers. It was to make sure that we had more competitive salaries at the top range to attract more people there. So we did it. It's Bass ackwards.
It's a Marxist philosophy you don't understand.
So, you know, it just goes against everything I was ever taught in leadership, that you take care of the lower people first. They're the ones that are in need. But you've got the top salaries in the school district are $250,000 to $300,000. If this were
a lot of them.
Yeah. And they're using, you know, it's going to come out. There was a public records request. Kevin was talking about the government credit card. You know, you look through that government credit card like I have for a couple of years. We don't adhere to travel limits. I'm blanking on the per diem rates for areas because we're supposed to follow the federal government travel rates. You know, we go to wherever, and instead of booking the, you know, the Best Western, which is within the per diem rate, we book the Fairmont. I'm just using those as examples so people don't get, you know, don't take me literally. But, you know, they booked the higher one, and the question was raised this morning. I was hearing that, well, do they have to reimburse? No. Nobody's reimbursing. You have individuals that are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year going out and buying themselves a coffee on our dime.
Well, every company that I've worked for and every company that I've worked, you know, helped consult accounting departments and internal controls, there's always an authorization, and each department has its own budget, and it's up to the leadership of that department to go through and say, hey, this is excessive, this is excessive, this is excessive, and tighten it there. Right. It is.
But it's also, if you look at the private sector, it's ultimately the board of directors. In our case, I think our official title is the board of directors, but we're supposed to be the representative of the community, not the protectors of the staff, and not the protectors of poor performance. And that's what this board is.
You have two employees.
We have one employee.
One employee, but aren't there two superintendents?
There are three superintendents.
Three superintendents. Okay.
And so, there are five principals at the high school.
That's what I'm getting. It used to be that there was one principal at the high school. It used to be. And so this is where the superintendent, I believe, has a fiscal responsibility to go back through and set this straight. So if they want to have the community support.
But if you're the superintendent and 6/7 of your boss keep telling you you're doing a great job, and you got the board members that are just interested in, you know, getting out of there by 9 o'clock every board meeting and saying I'm excited about this. I used that word at the board meeting the other night just to upset my wife. She noticed too. Why did you use that word?
I did have a question.
But I said I was not excited. So
I did have a question. Every time I go to the board meeting, there's a period of time that goes toward the donations, people who have donated items or funds to the school district. And I thought it was odd that Brad Pulaski was presenting, he had his laptop up there, and was presenting some of the donations at this board meeting and highlighted a $200 donation, which is great, and highlighted another, I don't know if it was $800, but skipped very quickly past that slide. And there was a $20,000 donation. And I think you called out, said, hey, wait a minute, can you go back to that slide? Because he did try to move through that very quickly, saying that, because he was wanting to highlight the smaller donations, but tried to skip over the $20,000 donation from the Resnick Foundation.
Right.
So where do those funds go? And do you know how that all came about? Because
I don't know what was going through his head.
I think that's great that there's a $20,000 donation, but you also have to understand that source in this community has had some, I don't even know what the word is, strings attached. I'll put it that way.
I've got the.
Well, while you look for that, can I go through the numbers on the bond? Because I think Jim might want to know these too.
Sure.
So assuming that the bond measure is a 30-year bond measure, the loan amount of $205 million, by the time all is said and done, it will be a total payment. I used 4.75% as the interest rate, which may be low. But I used 4.75 because the Lucia Marr school bond that went out at $143.2 million, that was at 4.5%. So I increased it. The total payment would be $385 million. And just for perspective, because you're paying interest for 30 years, just for perspective, that total payment every single month, the Paso Robles Joint Unified School District would be collecting from the property tax the property owners on the property tax bills, and would be responsible for a payment of, get this, monthly, $1,069,377 every month. Now, Kenny, I know you're going to look at me and say it doesn't make any difference to them because it's not their money. But when I mentioned that it would be almost $1 million a month, I was spot on. And when I spoke and I saw, as there were three or four people that kind of looked at each other at the school board meeting going, oh my gosh, would it be $1 million a month? Is that right? How could that possibly be true? It's more than that. And so then when you get to where you actually have registered voters, people that would be voting on this bond measure, there's 31,020.
Right.
31,020. So if you take that total dollar amount over the course of that, you know, using the 30 years, that becomes about $13,000 per registered voter, which
assuming
likely,
how long did you assume the life of the bond?
30 years.
Okay.
And that's roughly $25,000 a household. A lot of the households don't have children in the district, never had children in the district. And so you have people voting on a bond that they're paying for it, but may not ever get the benefit from having children be in that district. And when people say, well, I rent my home, so it doesn't affect me, I'm not a property owner, I assure you, your rental price, you know, the cost for you to rent is a factor of that is the property taxes. That has to be passed along to the renter. So every single person should understand what this means to their budget.
Unless California starts establishing rent control like New York.
There you go.
And that is a fear I have right now in this state. But back to your question on the Resnick donation, $20,000, and it's for the sports clinics to be held spring of 2020. It says 2026, I don't know if that's a typo because we've passed that. So maybe it's retroactive. I don't know. I don't know why he skipped over that. But I don't know. The oddly enough, the most contentious part of the evening was discussion of War Memorial Stadium, because you still have two board members. Actually, it was three, and then it went back to two, who did not want the names of any Vietnam or Korean War dead who graduated from Paso High on there.
Well,
which
I got,
just find disrespectful.
What I got from that was whether it was the World War II Memorial or whether it was the War Memorial Stadium.
Yep.
And I think that was clarified. So thank you.
All right. Last break. I think Darcy gets to talk about everything after this.
Oh, I want to talk about Shasta County.
All right. Back in a minute.
Ryan, what do painters do when it gets cold outside?
I don't know. What?
Well, they put on another coat, of course.
Seth, that joke needs some touch-up.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
We paint interiors year-round.
But fall and winter? That's when it's perfect time.
Yeah, perfect time for a fresh look.
We do full interior painting, residential and commercial. We work with your schedule.
Plus cabinet painting that makes old kitchens look brand new.
Clean lines, no mess, no stress.
From one room in your home to a whole office building, tasting room, medical suites, we've got you covered.
This season, call the Peek Brothers. I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
And everybody loves a great experience.
That's Peek Painting, P-E-E-K painting.com.
It's funny how the little things can make the biggest difference. Take hearing aid batteries. The batteries work just fine, but opening the package is another story. That's why Peter at Hearing Aid Specialists is proud to offer the new, easy-to-open hearing aid batteries. They're the only office in town stocking them. And for KPRL listeners, Peter has a neighborly deal. Buy one case of easy-to-open batteries and get one case free. Call 805-460-7385. 805-460-7385. Hearing Aid Specialists.
Summer evenings call for something special, and Cella Restaurante and Bar at Allegretto Vineyard Resort delivers just that. Savor rustic Northern Italian cuisine crafted from regionally foraged ingredients paired with an extensive wine list and garden-inspired craft cocktails, all in the warm, inviting atmosphere Cello is known for. Whether it's dinner on the patio or drinks at the bar, Cello is the perfect Paso Robles summer night out. Visit CelloPasoRobles.com to reserve your table.
All right, we're back. Darsha's on her phone texting with her BFF or something, so I'll take this moment to hijack the mic again. We did have a text come in over the break, and the question is, where do the building fees that go to Paso School District go? So those go into a fund, and those fees can only be used for maintenance. I have to double check, but I think it's just maintenance, potentially building as well. And I don't know the fund number off the top of my head. Okay, Darsh, I turned your mic back on.
Yeah, thank you. So I just wanted to let people know, I get from time to time people that call me lots of different names regarding election. And I really had a fun time talking with the Paso Robles Republican Women Federated, along with Shannon Kessler. Really fun evening, well attended, and appreciate a lot of the people that were there, even some city council members and some candidates for the city council. So what I try to let people know is that here we are, we have Dr. Fauci 6 years later, now where he's taking the fifth 111 times. 6 years ago, I could tell you the very things that are now, quote, coming out are things that many of us knew to be true at the time. And I would like to say that what's going on, Kenny's in charge of the calls, and then we have a call coming in, but what's now going on with the election integrity, or the safest and securest election of all time in 2020, there's now information that is finally coming out But there's information that I knew to be true at the time. So when these things start coming out, I like to try to highlight, remember when I said, or here's an example of information that is now coming forward that I think you want to know about. And one of those is Shasta County, California. But we will go to the phone lines because that's what we're here for, to hear from you. So please, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I'd like to clarify building fees. The intent of building fees is, say you're a developer, you come into Paso Robles and you want to put up 1,100 houses, and the school district says, well, excuse me, we're going to need a new elementary school, and you need to pay for it. And that's fair enough. But when they're closing schools, that rationale went away in San Luis Obispo because of retirees and college students. They went from 8 elementary schools to 4. So, and they leased out the rest. So the argument that we need to build a new school isn't there. So they had to reformulate it into a maintenance rationalization. And maintenance is like vehicle replacement. You put in money every year out of your budget. It's not a capital expenditure. So school fees got completely hijacked.
Agreed, and they're not giving the money back. So
no. There was no deferred maintenance. There was no deferred maintenance fund at all until I think it was 2023, because I had to do my foaming at the mouth madman routine over that. But no, you're absolutely right.
That's done in private businesses. I worked for a business where there was a vehicle replacement fund. And when a vehicle started breaking down too much, and it's like, hey, well, the company's put money, you know, the money is there. We're going to just go buy a new one.
Yep.
Well, and the government does, you know, it's use it or lose it. So if you get toward the end of the fiscal year and you still have money in your budget, you just go out and you buy something new.
Yeah, and I owed the community an apology over that from Tuesday night. I buckled.
You buckled.
Yep.
Well, let's expand on that, or do you want to hear about?
Well, we spent $105,000 on book vending machines.
I saw that part.
And I said, well, why don't we just buy the books without the vending machines? And everybody else was, well, we're really excited about this. And I was like, all right, fine. They'll never come up with another way of spending the money, because they had to spend it by September 1st. But I apologize. I buckled.
Well, thank you for your comment about the developer fees. And that's exactly correct. And of course, how can we, the members of the public, start highlighting these things, drawing them out, getting them out in the open for the public to see, so that we can start having accountability?
Well, you know, a lot of the information's out there. You have to dig around. You know, going back and looking at the district webpage, you can see how many cost overruns there were for Measure M. You can see how it really hasn't impacted or helped academic performance. You can see the declining enrollment. You can see the fact that it's forecasted to continue to decline. You know, all these pieces are there, and I try to tie it together to give everybody a clear picture. But, you know, this fall, I'm going to say this real quick about the bond measure. I don't want G26 to pass. I'll be upfront and honest. And it's because I don't think it's needed when you look at the plan. And I would encourage everybody to go and look at the draft facility maintenance plan that was presented from the last board meeting. But it doesn't do anything, in my opinion, to improve academic performance. And it really doesn't do anything to help with CTE, which is what they keep dangling in front of me. Hey, Annie, you like CTE? I do, but this isn't a good...
Great.
This isn't a good plan.
Our kids can't read,
yeah,
and they can't do math.
We can do probably the same thing for $50 million. And so there's going to have to be a bond. The community is going to have to really sit down. I had this discussion yesterday with some folks about the spaceport. Now, I like that idea. I think it's really cool. I'm kind of an aircraft buff. It's likely the only way I would ever get my son to move back here if you had like satellite launches. And if you look at some of the forecasted stuff for Paso Airport, you know, drones, things like that, there's potential there, but you're going to have a skilled local population, which we don't have. You have to focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic. Then get that strong base, which will allow them to go into the more high-tech stuff. And I would encourage people to go and look at what, you know, Mercedes and BMW and other car manufacturers had to do when they moved to the South. They brought in a lot of their own skilled labor. And in this day and age, they won't even bring in skilled labor. They may just bring in robotics. So the focus really needs to be first and foremost on the reading, writing, and arithmetic. So
imagine that. Gets back to the one room schoolhouse.
Let's hear about Shasta.
Okay, so I'm going to show you a picture and then try to describe it and see if I'm doing an accurate job of describing a picture.
It says it's a door padlocked shut that says keep out.
Two orange and black signs say keep out, and it's a double doors with a padlock. And this is the current state of the Shasta County Elections Department. So there are ballots behind this door. And the reason why that's important is because Clint Curtis, who is the registrar of voters there, he actually testified before the Senate, a Senate hearing committee back in 2004. He was the person who wrote 100 lines of code, approximately 100 lines of code, that could flip votes with a computer, using a tabulator, using a program that basically turns a 50-50 vote into 51-49. That algorithm has been run throughout our country and technically throughout 72 countries around the world via the Smartmatic, Sequoia, Diebold, Dominion voting systems. So what's happening in Shasta County right now, we only have a couple minutes, but it's been an interesting process because there was how he got to be registrar of voters is a whole controversy. But I'm just going to focus on where we are right now. He's actually requesting, asking, pleading for the FBI, whomever, law enforcement and investigative arm, to please come to Shasta County and secure these ballots, that he believes that there have been counterfeit ballots. There's paper that does not match. They use squares. We use ovals on our ballots, but there were squares that were perfectly filled in squares, which is exactly what we saw in the June 2022 recount, but perfectly filled in, not by a human being, but by someone who's printing or copying onto a ballot. So it looks very distinct, and we had a dozen people saw those ballots, and we all said the same thing. But where they are is this has happened in the June primary, and citizens have filed affidavits detailing what they saw regarding the ballots. There have been four FBI agents. I'm reading an article from Shasta Unfiltered. Four FBI agents, two from Los Angeles, two from Sacramento, have been interviewing them this week. Some of the citizens stated they had ballot paper, had a different texture, thickness, or weight. Other indicated the color of the ink on the ballots was slightly off, shades of pink and purple at the top of the ballot and black for the rest. Others expressed concern about how perfectly the boxes were filled in, as if a computer had printed them. One citizen tried to replicate the precision of the filled in boxes using three different pen brands. So what I'm getting at is right now we have election integrity issues throughout the state of California, essentially with non-citizens being on the voter rolls.
Awesome.
More to come.
All right. So, hey, I just want to say one. I got two texts, so I'm not going to get to
this
the next one. Last one says, I looked up Epcarian.
Specializing in dryer vent cleaning.
All right. We'll finish
it
later.
Don't overwork your dryer or let your vent start a fire. Contact Dylan
at lintpatrolca.com or call 805-975-5176.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.